Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. Brian Newman, our guest speaker from South Africa, will be continuing his series entitled Voices of a Dying Planet, a study into music, media, and the mind. Today we will look at how powerful music really is and what many musicians and philosophers say about music and its influence. Brian Newman is an ex-rock musician who now lectures internationally, speaking about music and its influence while providing sound biblical principles to Christians in regards to choosing music that glorifies God. You will not want to miss this thought-provoking message. Now here's Brian.
Welcome to our third presentation of the Voices of a Dying Planet series. For those of you who have been listening in, you will remember some of the very important principles that we have discussed from a biblical point of view, and of course the very interesting things we looked at regarding how the media are able to manage our minds. And we finished off last time talking about how cultural and political revolution can actually take place in society. If we can persuade people to abandon some of the mores and traditions. In fact, this is exactly the thought which British statesman Edmund Burke speaks of when he says, and I quote statesman Edmund Burke here, he says, "Cultural and political revolution always go hand in hand." Because revolutionaries, the ones who want to create the change, in other words, understand that if a people can be persuaded to abandon their traditions, their mores, and their cultural and religious norms, they can easily be led to accept radical political changes. Now think about what political changes really have to do with. It has to do with the way in which people govern themselves, the whole decision-making process that takes place within a culture or a country. If you can persuade people to abandon the traditions that they have, the mores, and particularly their religious outlook, then they will be able to then accept the changes which you want to bring in. And of course, in the context in which Edmund Burke is speaking, he is talking about negative changes, and we'll see this a little bit more clearly as we continue. Think about Western society, for example, in the way which it exists today. Most of the laws, let's take a country like the United States, for example, most of the laws of this country, that in which the Constitution is based, were based on biblical principles and biblical ideals. Think about this. If you can persuade people to abandon the basis for the way in which they govern themselves, and ultimately, as we alluded to last week, if you can persuade them to make decisions purely based on emotions and not on principles, and in this case, biblical principles that we are speaking of, then you can cause them to accept radical political changes as well. Notice, Edmund Burke, I continue to quote, he says, "Men are qualified for civil liberty in exact proportion to their disposition to put moral chains upon their own appetites." Desires, in other words. We are qualified, and everybody wants liberty today, but he says we are qualified for this liberty that everybody is talking about. Liberty to do what we want to do and so on, and have the freedom to express and so on. We are qualified for it in exact proportion to our ability or disposition to put chains on our own appetites, our passions, our emotions. In fact, he says here, society cannot exist unless a controlling power upon will and appetite be placed somewhere. And that's pretty logical when you think about it. If people are just making decisions randomly based on how they feel without considering any higher standards or principles or ideals, then you will have a chaotic society. Consider the state of our world at this present time. because people are being led to make decisions on a basis which is emotional and not on that which is biblical, on principle. In fact, Edmund Burke continues to say, he says, it is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds, notice what he says, men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Although we want freedom, if our minds are intemperate, we cannot be free. And then he says the reason is that their passions, in other words, their emotions, forge their fetters. Your own emotions, your way of making decisions, in other words, our way of making decisions based purely on emotions and the passions and desires that are of the flesh, if you look at it from a biblical perspective, they ultimately become the chains that bind you, in spite of the fact that you might think that you are having the freedom to make the decisions. People think it's free. For example, you have freedom, and look back to the 70s and 60s during the flower power hippie era, when the whole new age movement came in with a lot of concepts and ideas. They were talking about free sex and free love and free this and free everything. Well, freedom of expression is a good thing. Free within the right framework, these things are not necessarily negative. But when you start making people feel that they can indiscriminately make decisions and practice these things however they feel like it, whenever they want to, at any time, without taking into account certain very important guidelines and principles within which to function, then you end up with the situation which we have today. They think that they are free because they are able to do what they want to, but in fact, this freedom that they feel they are having is not really freedom at all. It has become the chains, the prison that is binding them. It is not true freedom. And in the area of music, this whole concept of change in the environment, in politics, and indeed in religion and everything else, and during our presentations, we're certainly going to look at the music and the religious connection with worship and so on. But music has played a vitally important role in establishing the situation we have today. For example, music, and this is of course something we all realize, we spoke about this in one of our earlier presentations, that music underlines all forms of advertising. If you turn on your television, music is there, if you're watching a soap opera or whatever it may be, to create the atmosphere in that soap opera, to set the tone for a particular scene. You turn on your radio, some advert is being advertised, music is there to underline that advertisement that is being done. And of course, depending on what particular cultural group you want to reach, if you're reaching the youth culture, you may use a music in that advertising that will tap into their emotions and their idea of what music should be. If you're reaching a different culture, the baby boomer culture, you might want to get something from the 60s and 70s or whatever to use as the music to create the atmosphere and to attract their attention. But people do not realize how powerful music is for changing people's manners, changing the way in which we function, and ultimately, like Edmund Burke was speaking of, changing the whole culture, programming the culture so that they will accept that which you want to bring in, because they will be making a decision based on emotion, and music is the language of expressing human emotion. I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to go back to some great philosophers just to give you some ideas to what they considered regarding music. Xu Qing, for example, who lived in the 6th century before Christ, well-known Chinese philosopher, he said that for changing people's manners and altering their customs, there is nothing better than music. Another great philosopher by the name of Boethius, a great Roman philosopher who lived in 500 AD, he said, music is a part of us and either ennobles, in other words, elevates or degrades our behavior. So he felt that, and certainly Xu Qing as well, that depending on the music that you were exposed to a large degree, it would influence ultimately how you behave. Confucius, another Chinese philosopher, 500 BC, he said, if you would like to know if a people are well governed, and if its laws are good or bad, then examine the music that it practices. So it almost seems to be that music is some gauge or litmus test by which you can ascertain the way in which people govern themselves, whether it's good or bad. A lot of people may say, oh no, music is neutral. You'll remember I said earlier on, many people say, well, how you listen to music and understand music has to do with your culture, your background. And let's for the moment assume, even if that were the case, it would still mean that it does not change the fact that we are affected by music. And it doesn't change the fact that there is good or bad music, which we are going to establish more and more clearly as we continue. Aristotle, speaking about the way in which music imitates the passions or the emotions, he says, and I quote, he says, music directly imitates the passions, in other words, the emotions or state of the soul. When one listens to music that imitates a certain passion or emotion, he becomes imbued with that same emotion. Now, this is obviously the case, we know this to be true, that music evokes an atmosphere because it is trying to, in the language or tone of the music, it is trying to represent a particular emotional state, and is trying to evoke that emotional state. A love song, for example, would try and evoke that emotional state within the listener. That's why the composer uses a particular type of atmosphere or tone while writing their music, and it's not only determined by the words of a song. We will look at that later on. But Aristotle says, and I continue to quote, that if over a long time one habitually listens to the kind of music that rouses ignoble, that means negative passions or emotions, his whole character will be shaped to a negative or ignoble form. So depending on what you are exposing yourself to will determine whether your character is built positively or negatively. And I refer back, of course, to the very important biblical principles that we have been looking at in our earlier studies regarding the body temple and how we are influenced positively or negatively through those different avenues to the soul. Socrates made this interesting statement, another famous philosopher. He says, when modes, in other words, styles or atmospheres or types of music change, then the fundamental laws of the state always change with them. Is that possible? That ultimately you can change the way in which people govern themselves, as you remember British statesman Edmund Burke tried to suggest, by changing the atmosphere. Let's consider the whole concept very briefly. Music creates an atmosphere, it is conveying an emotion. If you can get people to feel a certain emotion and get them to make a decision based on the emotional state, as we have seen people make decisions based on their emotions generally, unless they are using a higher standard to make principled decisions, if you can get them at that level through the atmosphere that is being created, ultimately the whole decision-making process and finally the way in which they behave and govern themselves will be determined by that emotion which is being constantly stimulated. Think of the media today. Think of movies, for example. What is the most prominent emotions that are being emphasized in the media and music? Sex and violence. If you continually promote those through the music and through the media all the time, ultimately you will change the way in which people's emotional state, and finally the way in which they govern themselves. The decision-making process will become affected, and indeed, as Socrates says, the fundamental laws, in other words, those laws that govern the people of the state, will then change with them. It's a process of cause to effect. Very, very important to bear in mind. The great, great revolutionaries in the history of this world, and of course great musicians, understood the power of music to do this, to unify people, because music speaks to the emotion. For example, the Soviet composer Dmitri Shostakovich, he spoke about the language of music, and he also made reference to Lenin. He said, there can be no music without ideology. Now, what does that mean, just very briefly? First of all, when a composer writes a piece of music, He composes that piece of music with a thought in mind that he wants to communicate to the person who's going to buy that music or listen to that music. He wants to communicate to them the emotion that he is feeling when he is writing that music, the atmosphere, the emotion. So there is some ideology, some thought that he, or philosophy that he wants to convey. And of course, through the language of music, he does it on an emotional level. And of course, he can do it on an intellectual level as well, through the lyrics that are used as well. But the emotional atmosphere, as we will make very clear as we continue in our series, is created by the tone of the music itself. He goes on to say that music can be said to have a bearing on politics. Politicians have always used music, and revolutionaries. Lenin himself said, and this is what Dmitri says, Lenin himself said that music is a means of unifying broad masses of people. Music no longer is an end in and of itself, but it is a vital weapon in the struggle. And of course, in this context, the communists' struggle that took place at the time. So revolutionaries understood very clearly the power that music had to persuade us positively or negatively. Frank Zappa, speaking about the contemporary forms of music and many of the other things like the lights and the sounds that go along with it, he says, and I quote Frank Zappa, he says, "The ways in which sound affects the human organism are myriad and subtle. The loud sounds and bright lights of today's music are tremendous," and notice what he says here, "are tremendous indoctrination tools." Tools through which people can be indoctrinated. David Crosby, speaking about, and you remember David Crosby, originally from the band Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, speaking about the language of music, and speaking about what they were using the music for, listen to what he said. "I figured the only thing to do was to swipe, steal the kids. I still think it is the only thing to do." He says, by saying that, I am not talking about kidnapping, of course, in the literal sense. He says, "I am just talking about changing the value system, which removes them from their parents' world very effectively." What was the parents' world? The Western society in the past, its laws and principles, particularly the United States, were based on biblical principles. That was the world of the parents, the older generation. Through the language of music, he's saying, we can change that value system, which will remove them from their parents' world. In fact, journalist John Farley, in a special fall issue of Time magazine in 2001, he said, "Music can be a tool for relaxation, for stimulation, for communication, and for revolution. In fact, it is often a rhythm of resistance against parents, against police, and against power." Speaking about the theme that is normally inherent in the music, and I will give you one example. Yeah, Brian Adams, speaking about the theme that is inherent and the overall theme behind their music, he says, "The overall theme is a need to break out free of conventional thought and not to be bound by what we are told is right and wrong." In other words, if it feels good for you, you make a decision based on how you feel. Don't be bound by the old system, what they tell you is right or wrong. And ultimately, when we are looking at it from a Christian perspective, the Word of God does not become your basis anymore for making decisions. It has to do with your emotions. If it feels good, do it. Many of the greatest musicians understood the power of music to change the mind. In fact, Mick Jagger, speaking about the power of music, he says, "We are," and their music, he says, "We are moving after the minds, and so are most of the new groups." They understood the power of the music, and yet most people today do not understand it, and unfortunately so many Christians do not understand the power that music has. 60s counterculture leader Jerry Rubin, and yes, somebody who's a part of the counterculture, one of the leaders in the counterculture, he tells us in very descriptive language what it was that made the 60s counterculture so such a success, so-called. He says, "The new left of the 60s counterculture sprang from Elvis's gyrating pelvis. Elvis Presley ripped off Ike Eisenhower by turning our upright young awakening bodies around. Hard animal rock energy, beat in other words, surged hot through us. the driving rhythm arousing repressed passions. In other words, through an overemphasis, a stimulation in a certain area of passions, and of course we have already outlined, we've already mentioned them, sex and violence, sexuality being one of the most prominent, by emphasizing those, these, what he calls repressed passions, were evoked within the people exposed to the music. And this helped to make possible the change in philosophy that the 60s counterculture revolution was trying to bring about. Socrates said, another famous philosopher, that musical training is a more potent instrument than any other, because rhythm and harmony find their way into the inward places of the soul, on which they mightily fasten, imparting grace and making the soul of him who is rightly educated graceful, or of him who is ill-educated ungraceful. It is so important for us to realize the power of the language of music to create an atmosphere, to stimulate the emotions, and to make decisions. But to understand this more clearly, we need to get together again in our next presentation, where we are going to delve more deeply into the language of music and how it affects us as human beings, and maybe look at some of the misconceptions that people have regarding this language. Thank you very much, and see you next time.
You've been listening to Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. Music is a powerful influence that many may not have fully considered. We encourage you to keep listening to this program, as Brian will continue this series on music, media, and the mind. If you'd like to order a cassette tape of this program for $5 US, please mention today's date and call Amazing Discoveries at 1-866-572-9457. That's 866-572-9457. Brian's book, From Rock and Roll to Rock of Ages, is an excellent resource that Amazing Discoveries is pleased to offer, sharing his personal testimony of how God changed his life from a rock star to an ambassador of the Lord Jesus Christ. The book is only $11 US and can be purchased with a major credit card by calling 866-572-9457. That's 866-572-9457. You may also like to visit our website at www.amazingdiscoveries.org, where you can order online or watch an actual video clip of Brian's lecture series. Brian also has an excellent multimedia presentation that is available on video. The website once again is www.amazingdiscoveries.org. Or call 866-572-9457. You can also write to us at Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3. In the US, please write to Box 4480, Blaine, Washington, 98231. We'd like to leave you with a song produced and arranged by Brian Newman and is entitled Abide With Me, that can be purchased through Amazing Discoveries. I'm Jason Hernberg. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Abide with me.
You've just been listening to Brian Newman with the song entitled Abide With Me. Brian Newman is touring the US and Canada this fall, sharing his research and insights on music in a number of churches across the country. If you have enjoyed his presentations on the radio, we would greatly appreciate your kind donations to help finance the music series Voices of a Dying Planet, being brought to North America in November. Brian's series have been a blessing to many in the past, and we thank you for being a part of bringing that blessing to others with your donations. Your tax-deductible donations can be sent to Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3, or call us at 1-866-572-9457. Again, your donations are tax deductible, and you can even call us with a Visa or MasterCard number for quick processing of your donation. Brian's message is a vital one and needs to go out to all churches around the country. If you are interested in booking Brian Newman for a music series in your church, please call the office at 1-866-572-9457.